Thank you, Jonga, and a blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, February 24th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The MDCT says the West should not fully engage or reintegrate the ZANU-PF government into the international community of nations unless it meets a number of conditions, including overhauling legislation controlling freedom of assembly and speech.
It would be folly, absolute folly, on the part of the international community to fully reintegrate the ZANU-PF regime into the Community of Nations if all these conditions have not been met.
But ZANU-PF dismisses the MDCT's campaign, saying the party is trying to attract attention, having lost a political ground in the country.
Because each time they lose the election, they resort to desperate measures, desperate means of getting attention, and so on and so forth. But they need to get over it and realize that, you know, they don't call the shots anymore.
And the Zimbabwe Investment Authority says foreign investors are beginning to show an interest in investing in Zimbabwe.
The MDC formation of former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai says the West should not fully engage and reintegrate the ZANU-PF government into the international community of nations unless it has met a set of minimum conditions it has drawn. The conditions include the alignment of the country's laws with the new constitution, a judicial review, and media reforms, including the overhaul of legislation restricting journalists in their work. The party also wants the ZANU-PF government to ensure the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission is overhauled, with every eligible voter being registered in time for the next crucial polls in the country. MDCT spokesman Obed Gutu says it is important that the international community continues to put pressure on President Robert Mugabe's government to ensure the next elections would not be disputed. He explains to Sandra Nyaira of Studio 7 why his party is courting the West on this issue.
We know that ZANU-PF is very good at indicating left and suddenly turning right. Our experience in the inclusive government did teach us that ZANU-PF cannot be trusted. Once they give you a promise, the best thing that you can expect from them is that they should see to it that whatever promise or promises or undertakings that they make, they should be seen to be delivered. Not only delivered, but they should be seen to be delivered. They have a notorious record of not respecting the Constitution. So all we are saying, once bitten, twice shy. It would be folly, absolute folly, on the part of the international community to fully reintegrate the ZANU-PF regime into the Community of Nations if all these conditions have not been met. We are dealing with a rogue regime here, a regime that is a danger not only to itself, but to the generality of the people of Zimbabwe.
And what would you say to those people who are saying the MDC does not currently have that leverage to be dictating to the international community on what ZANU-PF should do before they fully engage?
We remain the largest and most popular political party, and anyone who has been in Zimbabwe actually would agree with me that the MDC is a serious political player, and ZANU-PF does appreciate that we are the only game in town. And we are simply saying what we are doing is to ensure that Zimbabwe is reintegrated as a democratic nation back to the Committee of Nations. This is not an MDC agenda. This is but a democratic agenda of all peace-loving and democratic-minded people who would like Zimbabwe to get out of the socio-economic hellhole in which it finds itself thanks to decades of ZANU-PF misrule and mismanagement.
That was MDCT spokesman Obed Gutu speaking with us from Harare. Responding, Psychology Maziwisa, ZANU-PF's information director, dismissed the MDCT as a desperate party trying to get attention.
I don't understand what they're talking about, and I really feel for them and empathize with them. Because each time they lose elections, they resort to desperate measures, desperate means of getting attention, and so on and so forth. But they need to get over it and realize that, you know, they don't call the shots anymore, especially in the international community. They have been alienated. The international community feels that the MDC has let them down as far as the regime change agenda in Zimbabwe is concerned. That in fact, they are bitter with the MDC and the civil organization affiliates for abusing funds that were meant for regime change in Zimbabwe and using for personal purposes. So the international community is fast awakening to the reality that President Mugabe is the legitimate leader in Zimbabwe, and they must, you know, reach out to him if they want to maximize on the economic opportunities that exist in Zimbabwe. And that is why we've seen the different delegations from all over the world coming into Zimbabwe, engaging with President Mugabe over the last few weeks. The realization is there, and it's a realization that must now dawn on the MDC.
But some of the issues that the MDC is raising, like the issue of aligning the country's laws to the new constitution, judicial reform and media reform, what is the sticking point? Why is this not happening? Because ZANU-PF has also promised to do that.
They're talking nonsense, absolute nonsense. We have a commitment under the government of President Robert Mugabe to align every piece of legislation with the new constitution. And that is something that the government of President Mugabe is presently seized with. It's just a matter, I think, of diverting attention and of raising issues that are non-issues, issues that are not bread and butter issues. Our main preoccupation as far as President Mugabe's government is concerned is to deal with issues that matter, Zimbabwe assets. And that's why you've seen the efforts that you've seen over the last few weeks. And that's why you've seen the Russians coming into Zimbabwe investing billions of dollars towards value addition and beneficiation. And that's why you've seen what you've seen, the British even coming into Zimbabwe over the last few days. That is our focus. And we will continue with that. We will not be diverted and will not be forced by anybody to abandon that mission. We feel it is the right thing to do. And it is something that we must do to improve the welfare of the Zimbabwean people.
That was ZANU-PF Information Director Psychology Maziwisa on the line with Studio 7 from Harare.
Justice Charles Uungwe says legal practitioners, prosecutors and members of the judiciary should protect, promote and respect the constitution to allow the rule of law to flourish in the country. Correspondent Lloyd Amoyo has the story.
Justice Uungwe, who officially opened the 2015 legal year of the High Court in Mutare, said everyone in the country has a role to play in ensuring the constitution is respected, adding he expected more from professionals such as lawyers, prosecutors, lawmakers, and others. He said the country's values are reflected in the constitution and should be protected to ensure democracy takes root.
In any discussion of the new constitution, I am reminded of the saying which goes, success has many fathers, but failure is an orphan. It is unthinkable that our constitution should ever be condemned to being an orphan. Unless, as legal practitioners, prosecutors and members of the general, we protect, promote and respect our constitution, the orphanage may not be too far away from this progeny of our community.
Justice Uungwe said the debate about the constitution and constitutionalism should continue, adding this is key as it helps people encourage and remind each other of the integrity of the law. He said there is need also to assure the community that the judiciary strives to serve them and ensure justice prevails at all times.
We should, all of us as members of our community, show the responsibility of ensuring that our constitutional democracy takes root. In my respective view, this can only happen if we continue with the national discourse and is the essential underpinning of a free, just and stable society. That is the due administration of justice.
He said it is critically important for the courts to effectively resolve disputes in communities without fear or favor.
The courts should be able effectively to resolve disputes. Constitutionalism, in my view, connotes a complex of ideas, attitudes and patterns of behavior, elaborating the principles that the authority of government derives from and is limited by a body of fundamental law.
Justice Uungwe commended the government's efforts in trying to make sure the country's constitution is available in all the country's official languages, saying this will enable people to understand and respect the country's supreme law.
The government and its cooperating partners have designed programs which are intended to ensure that the new constitution has been made available in more than one language.
Mutare lawyers said Justice Uungwe's speech was good in as far as it addressed issues affecting the community. But they said what is critical at the moment was to ensure justice is delivered all the time. It is to address the poor working conditions in the judiciary, in particular increasing the salaries of prosecutors in the country. This, they said, would curtail corrupt practices at courthouses. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mutare, this is Lloyd Damoyo.
Newly appointed Maswingo resident Minister Shubai Mahofa has promised to relocate the people settled at Nyuanetsi Range after they were forcibly being evicted from the Tokwe Mukosi Basin due to flooding. Maswingo Rural District Council Chairperson Kila Zivu told Studio 7 recently that Nyuanetsi Range has been hit by a crippling food shortage, malaria outbreak, as well as a poisonous spider outbreak, wreaking havoc and now allegedly responsible for scores of deaths. Mahofa, who's replacing fired Kudakwashe Basikiti, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that she is grateful the first family is rewarding her hard work.
It shocked me that later on I found it is a job that I've been doing in so many in different ministries that I've served. And I thank the president and the first lady very much for having seen the work that I've been doing and the experiences that I've gained in different ministries and them thinking that I'm the person who can do the job. And as a result, God has just given me the job.
And what are you promising the people of Maswingo as their new resident minister?
I'm promising them some of the things that has been happening in Maswingo. Things like land, finishing of big projects, things like companies with investors, which they need to pay to the people, the community shares, you know, developing the roads, the whole infrastructure, I could say, especially the bike bridge road, which comes in with so many accidents. All these things, I'm looking at them and see that those are the priorities of my work. I should first go and work with them and let the Maswingo people be united and then be able to sit together and tackle our problems and have a good development.
That was newly appointed Maswingo resident minister Shubai Mahofa speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Maswingo.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
a closer look at the national economy with Nigel Chanakira.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
An explosion at a bus station in the northeastern Nigerian town of Potiskum has killed at least 17 people in the second attack to hit the area this week.
A task force for football's governing body, FIFA, today said the 2022 World Cup tournament in Qatar should run from late November to late December.
And the Democratic Republic of Congo has launched a long-awaited offensive against Rwandan Hutu rebels based in the eastern DRC.
The Zimbabwe Investment Authority, or ZIA, is targeting an annual foreign investment of at least $4 billion as compared to last year's $1.14 billion. The chairman of ZIA, Nigel Chanakira, says they are going on an all-out campaign to lure foreign investors, adding they are working closely with the finance ministry, the president's office, and the minister of foreign affairs in their efforts. Zimbabwe needs a much heavier dose of foreign direct investment, or FDI, across multiple sectors and industries to improve productivity. Manufacturing is said to be operating at 30% capacity utilization, but the country has been struggling to lure investors. Before committing their money, investors consider how easy it would be to start a business in a country, run the operation, corruption, the rule of law, and enforcement of contracts, among other issues. These elements constitute what is generally known as the investment climate of a country. Chanakira tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that investors are showing interest in doing business with Zimbabwe.
I think last year there was an improvement in terms of the general inquiries on investments to Zimbabwe. For example, we entertained the first probably British delegation, which was sponsored by the British government in like 15 years. We also then had Chinese, Russians, South Africans. We had a Turkish delegation as well. Early this year, we had another delegation of private sector sponsored visitors from the United Kingdom. Then we also entertained a French delegation. So generally, that is encouraging. Last year, we also went to South Africa. We went to China. Our CEO was also in the U.S. together with various government delegations to try and lure investments and to bring back people from the diaspora. We also had the Office of the Minister of Finance, which is our parent ministry, together with the President's Office, do quite a number of outward-bound missions on the state visits that were made to countries such as China. It was a positive outlook.
You have talked about the involvement of the President's Office in some of these outward engagements. How significant is it that other countries will know that the President is actively involved?
For a start, trips that went to China were efforts by the Ministry of Finance and, as I said, the President's Office. And these are largely involved in infrastructure projects and funding. So normally, if you've got an outward-bound mission of that nature, the applications then come after that visit. And we are going to be beneficiaries to possibly up to $3 billion coming from China and another possible $3 billion coming from Russia. The Russians are specific in focusing on platinum in terms of the platinum mines. And that one obviously involves the Ministry of Mines in terms of promotion. As via, these are obviously discussions that take place at a higher level. And then once the discussions are done, then we start seeing the approvals. And so far, we've got one physical approval that has gone through, which is for about $100 million, which is included in our figures of $1.14 billion. This is from the Russians that met with the presidency.
Let's also talk about the projects that are now operational. How many are they?
The way we measure the operation, clearly we do a calendar year in terms of investment approval. We compare year on year. Then, in the middle of the following year is when we then go in and do a monitoring and aftercare survey. And we can only tell you at this stage how many were operational from last in terms of what we did in 2013. We approved 166 in 2013 and 72 were operational. 13 were not yet operational. They were pending. And then the other balance of 81, they were still working to get them operational. So that's an indication of what we have at hand. But we cannot talk about 2014 because we don't feel it is fair to assess the operationalization of the projects up until about June. So if you come back to us in June, we'll be able to tell you how many are operational.
That was Zimbabwe Investment Authority Chairman Nigel Chanakira speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Still on business news, a company based in the United States being run by a Zimbabwean-born entrepreneur is expected within the next few days to launch a phone calling service to cater for the needs of various communities in Africa, Latin America and other areas. Zimphone founding executive Jerry Dumane tells Studio 7 the Click Dial application, which can be downloaded to Android and Apple phones, is designed to cut calling costs among various nationals staying abroad who normally want to talk to relatives back home. He speaks to Studio 7's Gibbs Dube about the company's new app that will also create stiff competition with big money transfer firms.
In essence, you're actually making a local call. We are the cheapest by far. We charge only 15 cents a minute as compared to incumbents that would charge you 43, 49 cents. So no one does what we do. We have very good technologies that we have developed in-house for the last 3 years. You can bring a smartphone. When you have a smartphone, we allow you to download a free application on any Android-powered device or an Apple type of a device. It could be an iPad, it could be an iPhone. Once you have that, we assign you a local Zimbabwean number which terminates or connects directly to the Zimbabwe network, thereby giving you a local to local interface with your friends and loved ones.
How much can it cost me to get a phone to Zimbabwe from, let's say, Washington?
Right now, to call someone within the Econet network, for instance, is about 20 to 25 cents in Zimbabwe when calling each other. With Zimphone, you're only paying 15 cents a minute. So it's actually cheaper from outside to call in Zimbabwe.
That was Zimphone founding executive Jerry Dumane speaking with Studio 7 from Washington, D.C. Zimphone is an international telecommunications service and solutions provider that allows you to make long-distance calls worldwide from computers and mobile handsets.
The Zimbabwe Commercial Farmers Union says it welcomes the government's decision to ban maize and mealy-meal imports, though the announcement comes before the final report on crop assessment from the Agricultural Technical and Extension Services, or AgriTechs, is released. Deputy Agriculture Minister responsible for crops and irrigation, Davis Marapira, told the Sunday Mail that the government has since stopped issuing import permits for onions and tomatoes, and there will be no more maize and mealy-meal imports from April 30th this year. The deputy minister said the government wants to protect local farmers from cheap imports flooding the country. But ZCFU President Wanda Chabikwa says last season's maize harvest was not enough to feed the nation and livestock until the next harvest, adding this season's crops in the southern parts of the country are already wilting. He tells Studio 7 that there is still need for maize importations to augment national reserves.
We must ensure that the local production is mopped up first before we allow importers to bring in the food crop from outside the country. We know we are not going to be able again this year to produce adequate for our food requirements, both human and livestock. So importation shall be required, but not now, but later on. Because around April, we are expecting to be harvesting this current season, it's May. So we would expect that crop to be bought first, to be mobbed up first. Then I know permits will be issued later. But we want this crop to be taken up first. So we support that move, and that's the move that we owe the lobby government to put in place.
The other issue that most farmers are complaining of is the low producer prices being offered by the GMB. What's your reaction to this?
The problem with the GMB is not low producer price, it's non-payment. We are so unhappy and we are so disappointed, and it is actually contributing to low productivity that we can expect, especially in the areas that are receiving adequate rainfall at the moment.
That was Zimbabwe Commercial Farmers Union President Wanda Chabikwa in Harare with Studio 7.
The National Youth Alliance has started a national exercise aimed at enticing the youth into politics. The program will see the alliance going from province to province to speak with the youth on why it is important that they take an active role in politics. The youth constitute more than half the country's population. The Action Alliance says it's a youth that must have a say in decisions that influence the country's future. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke to Itai Zamara, spokesman of the National Youth Action Alliance, who explains the challenges young people are facing as they try to join politics.
These youth define their agenda, define their objectives, and define the destiny of a new Zimbabwe which belongs to the youth generation, because you cannot talk of the new Zimbabwe of the 91-year-old.
There are some youth that would describe themselves as conditionally pessimistic, saying that though they want to be part of politics, they're more worried about the day-to-day and making sure that they can survive.
The message to them should be the product or the consequence of our national crisis, whereby people are failing to get bread and butter, which we are raising here, or to have daily issues addressed, is the crisis of leadership. Therefore, we are taking the message to them to say, for us to correct the fundamental or the root causes of this, we must step up and also assume leadership position so that we can be involved in effecting policy formulation, in effecting policy implementation.
That was Itai Zamara, spokesman of the National Youth Action Alliance, speaking on with Studio 7 on the line from Harare.
And in sports, Zimbabwe lost to the West Indies by 73 runs in their World Cup cricket match played in Australia today. Sports commentator Dean Du Plessis tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawuye more.
What we have to understand is that Chris Gayle, who caused all the damage today against Zimbabwe, is a very, very fine player. Now, he has been out of form for a long time, especially in this format of the game, which is a 50-over format of the game. Unfortunately for Zimbabwe, they were the ones who bore the brunt and who experienced the rather unpleasant taste of what it is like to be on the receiving end today. Chris Gayle scored a magnificent 215, which, of course, is the first time that anybody has scored a double hundred in a World Cup match. They have scored double hundreds in one-day internationals, but not in a World Cup match. And that's exactly what happened today. As for Zimbabwe, well, the problems with them was yet again with their bowling. The bowling, especially towards the back end of the innings, was very disappointing, as it was against the South Africans and as it was against the United Arab Emirates. But this time today, they'd really be paid. So 372 was always going to be a little too much for Zimbabwe.
When you look at Zimbabwe's performance today, who would you give credit to?
You do have to give Zimbabwe some credit in the way that they went about the circle. They didn't just try and block out the 50 overs. Not at all. They decided to be as positive as they possibly can and ended up being bowled out for 289. Thanks to good contributions from Sean Williams, who made 76, and Craig Irvin, 52. Creditable as Zimbabwe batted, the point is that Zimbabwe have now played three games in the World Cup and only won one. And with tough assignments against Pakistan, Ireland and India to come, you find it very, very unlikely that Zimbabwe will progress to the next round.
Meanwhile, Zimbabweans in Australia say although they were disappointed at Zimbabwe's loss today, the team put up a spirited performance and they will continue to attend future matches. Charles Majabvi, who was at this game today, gives us his view.
Our boys played, but the challenge that we had is our bowlers. I can say they were not good today because at the end of the day, they tried by all means and managed only to take out one player from West Indies, one wicket. So at the end of the day, it shows that we are weak on that part of bowling. And when it came to the batting as well, the challenge that we had, we lost almost like three wickets in only eight overs. We had already lost three wickets. That was our main downfall, because once the top order is gone, then it's a challenge. So it was very tough for them to come back and chase that huge amount of runs. For the supporters, we were there supporting them, singing along. I can assure you that the small crowd that was there of supporters, they were supporting the team and singing. We were singing to try and encourage the boys to pick their game up. But unfortunately, they tried their best, but they lost the match, and it was disappointing.
Zimbabwean cricket fan Chills Majavi speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawuye from Australia.
That brings us to the end of the show, but remember to stay tuned for Studio 7's live talk. Today, we have the youth action with Tatenda Gumbo and Ntungamili Nkomo. This is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.